India is the second largest consumer market for all of these global players. If the inference workloads move to India, what does that actually translate to in terms of actual demand?
It's huge. So today, for example, India has about 50,000 to 60,000 GPUs deployed. We expect this will go 40x in the next 4 years. There'll be a couple of million plus GPUs deployed.
And I think you also made a massive announcement around the AI summit this February. How does the strategy change?
Blackstone did their diligence. They hired Semi Analysis to do diligence on us. Semi Analysis, by the way, has rated NESA as the only rated neo cloud in India. So there are multiple neo clouds, but we are the only ones that passed muster with Semi Analysis.
Every investor globally, you know, keeps asking the question, like, India AI opportunity, when will it explode?
There was a time where we were doing even short-term contracts, etc., for customers because we wanted to, get the customers to start adopting and also get our processes streamlined, etc. Now, there's so much demand that even from the domestic market that, we are not able to do short-term contracts. All our bare metal clusters are all booked for long-term contracts. So that itself shows that there's been a big shift in the adoption.
Hi Sharad, thank you so much again for spending time with us. In many ways, you actually started the entire AI story in India when, obviously, with first Netmagic being the first data center, and then you identified, the big trend earlier than others and decided to start NESA. We're privileged again to be early partners in that journey. First question to you is really, how did you spot this opportunity when none of us in the ecosystem were even talking about AI?
So first of all, Rajendra, thank you for having me and thank you for all your support. So let me first start with Netmagic. The data center opportunity I actually saw because most people in India at that time were only building for retail internet, and nobody was building infrastructure for enterprises, mission-critical enterprises. And I'd seen that companies like Exodus in the U.S. in the late 90s were building that in the U.S. and were doing very well. So that's the reason I said it's only a matter of time that businesses will need mission-critical internet and set up data centers in India. So we were the first to do data centers in India. On the AI infrastructure, what happened was at Netmagic, we had a cloud offering called Simply Cloud, and that didn't have any AI infra. They didn't have GPUs, for example. In late 22, early 23, when ChatGPT went viral, we had customers starting asking us for GPUs. And that's when I knew that this is an opportunity that we couldn't leave a begging. And then, of course, we tracked. So there was customer demand that really started this. And also, we saw successes of companies like CoreWeave in the US, right, really doing well and leveraging this really well. So that's how this idea came. Of course, when we started, as you know, we thought we'll focus only on the software, but then realized that we have to do full stack if we have to make it big. And that's how we got into doing NESA as an AI cloud acceleration platform.
No, it's helpful for people to just remember the origin story, but honestly, like the last few years, you all have accelerated and become the number one player in the industry. And I think you also made a massive announcement around the AI summit this February. Congratulations. I think having this large an investment from a reputed investor like Blackstone will really help accelerate the company from here on. Maybe if you could just share with folks, how does life change? Like, how does the strategy change?
So first of all, having somebody like Blackstone now, questions on us being a startup and whether we'll survive, etc., all gone. And now, big banks and big financial institutions, big global clients are now looking at us very positively. We're getting a lot of inbound requests from people to do this. And Blackstone did their diligence. They hired Semi Analysis to do diligence on us. Semi Analysis, by the way, has rated NESA as the only rated neo cloud in India. So there are multiple neo clouds, but we are the only ones that passed muster with Semi Analysis. And Blackstone did a thorough diligence with them before investing. So the fact that somebody like Blackstone would invest gives the credibility. And now there's a lot of inbound requests, even from, and the news made so much, it made so much news that even global majors are now talking to us for deploying infrastructure. Of course, one of the reasons that Blackstone invested in us was there was, India has a lot of inherent advantages, right? We are the second largest consumer of AI in the world. We have a large data center footprint. We have enough power available, at least in the short to midterm, Unlike the US, where most of the data center capacity is gone, is sold for the short to mid term. Of course, there'll be new data centers coming up soon, but data center pricing is lower compared to the West, etc. So, and the government has now announced a tax break for cloud providers setting up infrastructure for the world from India, and so all this is causing global majors, whether it's the frontier labs, whether it's the inference off-takers, to set up inferencing clusters in India. And we saw that opportunity come to us earlier, so we were approached by some of these majors. And that's when we decided that, look, we need to raise significant capital if we have to address that capability, right? Because this requires billions of dollars of investment. And that's how this whole thing got stitched together.
Actually, that makes a lot of sense. Like, if India is the second largest consumer market for all of these global players, if the inference workloads move to India, what does that actually translate to in terms of actual demand?
It's huge. So today, for example, India has about 50 to 60,000 GPUs deployed. We expect this will go 40x in the next 4 years. There'll be a couple of million plus GPUs deployed. So from a demand perspective, we are seeing massive demand, especially from the global majors. We are seeing the Indian market also grow nicely, especially in the financial sector. But, you know, I think with this, with data center capacity being made available, and also with the tax issues being addressed for global, for making India as a regional hub, we are seeing a huge demand for GPU infrastructure in the country.
So that kind of growth, the demand is, does one even need a GPU procurement strategy, or it's just go out and execute and use this capital to?
So there are two different issues. So for example, there is the, so we are actually looking at multiple markets, right? We are looking at the India market. That's of course a bread and butter market. And there you have to have a procurement strategy because it's still maturing, right? And then of course there's a global demand where you buy against large customer orders. And so, you know, our strategy, you know, we have to kind of figure out, and of course you have to use capital wisely. So
yeah, no, that makes sense, of course. For the, I guess the India market, I guess maybe we'll spend a little bit of time on the startup ecosystem, because that's probably where the early adopters are using AI first. I guess many founders out there are probably still, you know, deploying some workloads on, you know, one of the hyperscalers like global AWS, GCP, Azure. I guess, where do you see NESA really kind of standing out versus those? Because it's, in my head, it's very clear, but I think maybe for founders, it will be helpful.
So three or four clear advantages that we offer, right? Of course, you know, hyperscalers have, you know, got very, very elaborate service offerings. So by no means is this saying that they're not up to them. They're, of course, top class and world class. But three or four key reasons. One is we are completely AI focused, nothing else but AI, right? So second is that, you know, from a pricing perspective, also, you know, because we are only AI focused and we don't have other overheads, this, we are more cost effective. Now that can change over a period of time. Hyperscalers have the pricing power to, you know, give deep discounts. But I think the main thing is the flexibility. So we are able to, you know, most of the hyperscalers, because of their massive scale, they are cookie cutter, both in terms of the pricing as well as in the in the offerings. Whereas we can, if you look at AI, especially in India, a lot of customers need white glove service. They need some handholding, right? Which is what we are able to provide. We are able to, for example, provide private cloud on-prem or in a third-party data center GPUs where the client, so for example, some of the banks have become our customers because in our own setup, we were able to give them a air gap GPU infrastructure, which is difficult for, I'm not saying hyperscalers can't do it, but it was difficult for them to do it because it's difficult for them just for one market to break their cookie cutter offering. So I think that the flexibility, the pricing advantage, and the you know, the fact that we are able to do things like private cloud is really where we differentiate from others.
And I know we'll touch upon you know, regulation and all that later, but maybe on financial services as a market, I think obviously there is an infrastructure that is unique to India, but there is also potentially something around, you know, data sovereignty and data, you know, localization that may come about.
I mean, DPDP is also coming, and they've given, I think, 18 months or from the act to comply. And financial services, especially banks and financial institutions, have to keep their data within India, number one. And number two, they also don't want multi-tenancy. So they need, for some of their workloads, for some workloads, it's okay. If it's a customer service workload, they're okay using a public cloud offering. But then for some of the workloads, they have to keep either on-prem or in a air-gapped environment. And which is where, again, that flexibility that I talked about is something that we can differentiate with respect to some of the hyperscalers. We are, by the way, we are also partnering with them because of their flexibility. We are all, because, you know, if a bank, for example, needs more than just AI infrastructure, they need CPU compute and they also need AI infrastructure. There's some applications that are not AI applications. So we can marry the two. So most of the hyperscalers have partnership programs where they can provide, Microsoft, for example, has something called Azure Local. You can use Azure and you can also use our GPUs, which are air-gapped for the bank to use, for example. And so we are partnering with some of the hyperscalers to do that.
Got it. I think the fact that financial services is an early adopter, I think you had predicted many others have also kind of gone after that market opportunity. I'm curious, like, what are the other big industry verticals that you've seen as early adopters in your...
Sure. So we've seen, so in financial services, one of the reasons they are very big adopter, I just want to touch upon that before I touch the others. See, they've always had a lot of data and they've been using machine learning. So generative AI may be new, but machine learning is old, right? And so they've, all the major banks, etc., have been using for data science, for analytics, for fraud detection, they've been using machine learning for many years. Some of the largest banks in India have, you know, 200 people teams doing this, and not for now, before ChatGPT became viral, right? So that's why they became the earliest adopter. The kind of customers we are seeing, of course, financial services, then we are seeing in healthcare. We have this company called Merrill Life Sciences in Vapi that is using AI in drug discovery. In addition to doing productivity improvement and all the normal cases like, you know, customer service, document summarization, etc., but they're also using AI to generate revenue by doing drug discovery. We are seeing Hungama is another case study where they're using AI to build these short clips, drama sets that they call it, micro drama series, right? Then we have a lot of people doing compliance using AI, right? So you have the SEBI and RBI circulars that come. They're very large circulars. Most before AI, most of the time was spent by teams to just comply. Whereas now you can automate this entire thing. You can take that circular, feed it into an LLM, get a summarized list of tasks that you can then allocate automatically. You can allocate the workflow to, you know, the chief financial officer, the CEO, the chief risk officer, etc., and then have a dashboard that kind of summarizes this. So the other industry that we're seeing is in manufacturing. We've seen, for example, defects. Detection of defects in manufacturing, quality control. We are seeing AI used in research and education. IITs and ISCs are using AI, not only for two reasons. One is for research and one is for teaching students machine learning. So we are seeing across the board wide adoption of AI. I think from an adoption perspective, you know, every single industry that we speak to, every single vertical is using some form or the other of AI. Of course, the low-hanging fruit is software development, etc. That's a given. But voices. India is a very big voice market, right? So with a lot of companies doing speech to text and text to speech that are using our platform.
No, actually, since we spoke of financial services, I'm sure special plug to some of our founders also.
Yeah, like Grey Labs. Grey Labs is a great example.
Media, there was Dashtoon, healthcare, there are a bunch of folks as well. Yeah. I wonder, like, as you were describing so many different use cases, one of the other things that we picked up in a recent report that we just shared with you as well, which is with OpenAI, many people say that there are a lot of projects that, you know, kind of see early momentum, but then they never reach actual production scale. I guess for the customers where you have seen things work out and succeed, what maybe differentiates that set versus people who kind of run into these roadblocks of, you know, still being at the experimental stage?
Yeah, so I think the customers where they've clearly defined their priorities, they defined the use case based on their business priority, defined a set of parameters. For example, we have this customer called ITQ, where they power a lot of these travel portals. And they had a very clear use case. They wanted to process a few hundred billion tokens a month. They wanted 99.5% accuracy. They wanted a certain parameter on time to first token. They wanted P99, which is 99% of the tokens to be responded, the responses to come within 2 seconds. So that defined a very clear set of priorities. They had their workflows, etc., all defined. And they looked at multiple. They looked at hyperscalers. They looked at some of the frontier labs. And then they realized, and then they came to us, and they wanted it in a certain budget to make the ROI, right? And we were able to do by doing dedicated inference endpoints using a Qwen model. They were able to achieve their objective. So in their case, they've gone production, right? And it's mission critical for them. So where it's mission critical, basically, first of all, the organization needs to define their priorities, right? They need to figure out that this is my priority, this is what I want to achieve, and these are my objectives, this is what will give me ROI. Once they've defined that clearly, then we can work towards achieving that. And once they achieve that, then they go into long-term production. Otherwise, a lot of the projects just remain in pilot. The IT people will show their management that, look, we've made AI work. Mm-hmm. But then they don't get business buy-in because they're not able to show ROI.
Yeah. Likely they also perhaps make mistakes early in their journey. Like, I'm sure there are a bunch of common infrastructure mistakes that folks make as well.
So there are many mistakes that we come across. One is data itself, right? It's not in a proper format that can be used in models. Second is, there's often a mismatch. We've seen different kinds of issues with networks, for example. So in some cases, we've seen networks over-provisioned. People have built 800G backbones when the actual traffic is not less. In some cases, we see the networks under-provisioned. So inter-GPU communication, GPUs are very powerful, but they're not getting the bang for the buck. Sometimes the infrastructure is not configured properly, so they don't get, if they're supposed to get X number of tokens per second, they're getting like 1/10 of that. Or they're seeing very little utilization of the infrastructure. So they're paying a lot of money for the infrastructure, but the utilization is very low because they've not optimized the infrastructure. So all these areas are, then the blame goes, okay, I'm not getting my ROI. Right? So when we get involved, we also address, and when you're talking about differentiation with some of the other players, one of the things that we do is we actually provide the white glove service. So we actually go and help architect the solution so that we can get them the maximum bang for the buck. And we've made the assumption that if we achieve what they want, then they would get the ROI. Right? So
no, perfect. Switching gears, I'm curious, like every investor globally, keeps asking the question, like India AI opportunity, when will it explode? Like it's started, but when will it explode? What signals do you look for?
So, we are seeing a much faster adoption in the last, I would say, it's almost like exponential in some sense. One is, of course, the global, being the second largest consumer market, we're seeing a lot of global majors coming into India. So that, keep that aside, even if you look at just the India market.
Yeah.
There was a time where we were doing even short-term contracts, etc., for customers because we wanted to, get the customers to start adopting and also get our processes streamlined, etc. We could automate our operations better so that we could serve, scale this better. Now, there's so much demand and that even from the domestic market that, we are not able to do short-term contracts or contracts where, people want to terminate, only want for 15, 20 days. So we do have allocated some public cloud offerings where we can do that. But all our bare metal clusters are all booked for long-term contracts. So that itself shows that there's been a big shift in the adoption. And also other thing we've seen is initially a lot of people are training models for Indian languages, for example, right? Now we're seeing that entire shift going to inferencing. So maximum workloads now are deployed for fine-tuning and inferencing. And a lot of the early POCs or pilots that customers are doing are now converting to production. And that we are seeing a longer-term duration contracts because they're now mission-critical and they need to be run for longer periods of time.
Actually, since you mentioned inferencing, I wanted to touch upon that. Like in many ways, like India, given the scale of the market plus the fact that we are the back office for the world, India in some ways is uniquely positioned to become like the inference capital for the world. How far away are we from that opportunity?
So I think we I think there is a lot of interest from global majors, all the frontier labs, all the hyperscalers. You've seen all the announcements in Vizag from Google and from other majors, Microsoft, others have all made massive, AWS have made massive announcements for India. And most of this is going to be inferencing, right? So it is clear. I think, so you'll see this shift, you know, you'll see a massive amount of compute. As I said, you know, we are seeing, going to see a 40x explosion in GPU infrastructure in the next 3-4 years. And that, you know, both from a data center build, from a GPU deployment, AI workloads today are 25% of the data center workloads. They will go to 70 to 80% in the next, by 2030. Right? So that is, that's a given. Whether or not we'll still be the largest, whether or not we'll be the inference capital of the world still remains to be seen, because there's a very large gap between what where we are today and where US and China are, right? So, so you know, of course, people are targeting India not only for, you know, the Indian market. So, for example, enterprises.
Yeah, if you have, exactly, right? Global AI global applications.
Yeah, global applications. We're looking at India because our data center, we have data center capacity, we have power capacity available now. In the, you know, obviously, when the, if there's an explosion in India, we could have constraints in some of that ourselves. So it depends on how well we tackle it. Now, for example, from a power perspective, you know, Mumbai has the best power in the country because we have private players like Adani and Reliance. And a lot of other places, there are government players. Now, government, you know what procurement, you know, I'm not saying the utilities are bad. I'm just saying that, you know, the processes are such that they can't upgrade fast enough in many states, right? And so you see there's a huge difference. Why does Bombay have 50%, Mumbai have 50% of the data center
capacity
in the country? It's because of private power. And even the in Mumbai, even the government facility, MSCDCL, MSCDCL, TCL and DCL are also much better than some of the counterparts in other parts of the world, country, right? And so so I think, you know, how fast we are able to provide power would depend on would really determine whether we can get a larger than usual market share of global inferencing workloads.
One other thesis that we have internally, and you know, would love to hear if you feel differently about it, is India with its engineering, you know, bench, and the need for forward deployed engineers, for some humans in the loop to actually make you know, AI applications work in Fortune 500 companies. You know, we have an opportunity to actually have a pretty large.
It. We already have it. We have companies like Fractal. Look at the way Srikanth is growing Fractal. We have that already. We all the major IT companies. I firmly believe that the IT companies will do well. I don't think they will. You know, the you know, quote unquote body shopping businesses is gone, but they've all transformed. Infosys is doing a great job. Others are also doing a great job. TCS, Infosys, all these guys are doing a great job. They're transforming the entire workforce to lead with AI, and they will make you know, today also, you know, people are saying consulting companies like McKinsey and all are in trouble, but you know, you know, end of the day, enterprises need somebody to help them do this. So while, of course, there are, you know, Anthropic has announced their own company, OpenAI has announced their own services company, they will, of course, do well. But I think there's enough room for all these companies to do well. And I think India will, you know, has that advantage of, as you said, so I agree with your thesis. But I think India has a bigger opportunity. India has an opportunity to actually build for India and for the world, as opposed to just being the back office for companies.
Yeah, no, I was just going to come to that, because all of the stuff that we've spoken of is more India in the context of the world. But there's also this extremely unique thesis that we, you know, believe in internally, which is, you know, India's digital public infrastructure is world class. Like, there is no other market that has access to, you know, what the government has been investing in over the last decade plus. And I'm sure that the fact that financial services has been able to move so fast in India with AI adoption is partly also because of this infrastructure. So as you see DPI and, you know, AI, what are the areas where you see, you know, things already kind of working within your customer base, and where else do you think it can work?
So, you know, so one thing about DPI and AI, right, and I'm shamelessly stealing this from Nandan Nilekani's talk that I heard at the AI summit, where he said that, you know, this is on a different context, where people asked him about, you know, in a lot of the mature markets, people are getting scared about AI, saying that AI will take away their jobs. Whereas, and his, he had a very interesting take. Just because you mentioned DPI, he had an interesting take saying that, you know, DPI made lives better.
Yeah.
Right? For people, you know, especially in COVID, where anybody could, you know, transact using UPI.
Get a vaccine.
Like, right. And get a vaccine, right?
Get subsidies.
Yeah, get subsidies, etc. Right? So all that, you know, it actually made, technology actually made the common man's life better. I believe that, and his take was that if AI can genuinely do that in India and if people solve real problems, then rather than fearing AI, people will actually adopt AI more because it will make the common man's life better. And I think that has a lot of merit. Anyway, coming back, what was your original question?
I was thinking just DPI to the power AI.
Yeah.
Customers where you're seeing that that thesis is actually already playing out and maybe a few areas where you feel, you know, actually I see the opportunity, but I don't see enough... companies in my network or founders who are attacking these problems?
So a lot of the customers, a lot of our customers, I'm not sure I can name them. I'll name them, but then we can edit it out later if we feel that that's not allowed. So yeah. PhonePe, JustPay, Perfios, all these guys are, today I met a customer called Dhan, a prospect called Dhan. They're all looking at, they built SLMs, where they will have a personal assistant, if you will, for financial services, right? And so all these guys are using AI and they're going to, you know, marry it along with their UPI payments for their clients. You mentioned a company that was also...
This is a company called Ulka, which is AI companion for financial services for every Indian.
Yeah, so I think these are classic examples of how DPI plus AI will actually do well. But I personally believe that while AI will disrupt certain market, as for example, things like paralegals and content creation, etc., will get impacted to some extent. But they will also create a lot more new jobs. And like with any transition, you know, technology transition that's happened right from the time, you know, from bullock carts, we went to motor vehicles, etc., we'll figure out a way to overcome this, and it'll only make life better in the long run.
You know, maybe a few words on just India's AI mission, and I know you were very closely involved with the Feb Summit in some capacity. But what do you think?
So I think the intent of AI mission is very, very good. It is very good, which is to spur the adoption. For example, training of large language models in Indian languages was one of the theses. Data sets that have been created in AI Kosh, right? Indian data sets. Also to spur some training in scientific models, etc. So I think the intent was very good. I think where is the execution that needs to evolve? And the reason is that, you know, for example, give an example. Server prices in the last 4 months have gone up 40%, right? Because of memory and flash. And you still have that L1 criteria pricing which is stuck.
Yeah,
and so who's going to provide GPUs at those pricing, because it has to be a win-win for everyone. The good news is the government has taken it very positively. They said they were going to revise norms, so we're waiting for this to anything large you do, I think it takes about a year and a half before it stabilizes. So we're hoping that there's a way that the government can fix it. They have, to some extent, it has been successful. I think Sarvam demonstrated in the AI summit the model that was trained using AI mission GPUs. So BharatGen is using AI mission GPUs for their large language models.
As I'm hearing you, I'm thinking, you know, as a leading infrastructure provider for AI adoption in India, and you also said demand currently is outstripping your own expectations.
Yes.
How do you think about your own expansion pace in the face of uncertainty? Could be demand, could be price, could be, you know, flash memory, you know, all of these things. How do you manage your own expansion pace?
It's interesting. There are many factors at play. For example, we thought that, you know, there's a huge risk of GPU obsolescence, right? Every year, NVIDIA comes. Every time you go to GTC, NVIDIA is announcing a new GPU, right? So we weren't sure. You can't take too much inventory because as the new model comes out, new GPU comes out, people will want the latest, right? So that was the original thesis. But because of memory and flash prices, even the older inventory is now selling at a higher price, right? because of, you know, the thing. So it's been very interesting. But of course, when new fabs come in and the memory no longer becomes a premium, again, there could be a correction. So you have to be very careful. So the way we look at it is we have, you know, we have the bare metal clusters, as I said, and we have the public cloud platform-based services. Platform-based services, you know, what we do is we look at the utilization and then, you know, and we know the lead time that it takes for GPUs to come in, and so we order accordingly. So we, you know, constantly keep that. For the large bare metal clusters, we do it against. We don't do speculative buying.
So it's just against long term.
Again, long term.
For the founders out there, are there pockets of the India AI opportunity, maybe more on the consumer side, that you wish you were hearing of more?
So if you look at some of the problems that India faces, right, there's healthcare, there's education, there's agriculture, could be three of the...
I mean, there's a manufacturing opportunity.
Manufacturing also. Opportunity as well. So actually, the government has done a good thing there. They've created centers of excellence for all of this. We're working with the Center of Excellence for Agriculture. We're working with Center of Excellence for Education. We're working with the Center of Excellence for Smart Cities.
Smart City, yeah.
And there are two more. There's healthcare, education, agriculture, smart cities, and manufacturing. Right? Manufacturing has just been announced, along with IIT Bombay and Columbia University. But I think if founder, these are all huge opportunities, and I would love for founders to solve these problems. I gave you the example of Nuvo that's doing AI drug discovery, but you know there are a lot more common man problems that could be huge in India, you know, whether it's healthcare related, you know, just diagnose, you were talking about we were discussing earlier, we were talking about this company that's doing breast cancer detection.
Correct.
For the Indian market, right? That's doing really well. Cure.ai does also X-ray diagnosis, not only for India, but also for the world. But so healthcare is a great opportunity where there's so many different problems that could be solved for the Indian market. I think education is another thing, whether it's personalized education. There are companies like Rocket Learning and all that are using AI to address large-scale population, but there are a lot more that can be done. So I would love to see more founders address some of the problems for India and hope investors like you fund them.
Actually, one strategic advantage we have, DPI, we've spoken of India being the potential inference capital for the world. Obviously, you know, we have data center capacity that's coming up, but one thing people don't talk about is just the data sets. Like, India is just ridiculously low-cost, you know, data. Like, if one had to actually get, like, these kind of medical imaging data in the US, can you imagine the cost of actually...
I know of hospitals that who are happy to, you know, anonymize and share data so that there's enhancements done there. And so, yes, you are right. Data set, the cost of, you know, acquiring this data is much lower in India than anywhere else.
That's one example in healthcare. If you think of manufacturing, the reality is if you have to scale physical AI and, you know, manufacturing is an obvious opportunity, you know, manual dexterity is a complex problem. Like, if you don't have access to low-cost data in actual day-to-day operations...
Yes, it'll be very expensive to do
very
that,
expensive yes. to do. I mean, I don't see how people are... Yes, you can execute that same thing in the US, but the cost of collecting that data will be
huge.
Huge. You spoke of IITs. I know you're also very emotional about the association with your own alma mater, and maybe talk a little bit about what's happening with you know, the work with AI and IITs.
Yeah. So for example, we were associated with the Bharat Gen project, which was part of the Technology Innovation Hub. Now there's a separate Section 25 company and headed by my friend Rishi Bal. And they're doing a fabulous job. They're trying to build a trillion parameter model in Indian languages. We were fortunate to work with them in the speech and vision models earlier on in their journey. They've now got a large allocation, as I said, from AI Mission, and they're working there. But we're also, we have a go-to market with them for their inferencing. Now that these models have got trained, they're now trying to get enterprises to use them. And so we are working with them and taking them to the market. Your early adopters are people that you always cherish. And of course, in this case, I have a deep relationship with IIT Bombay. Not only did I study there, but also I'm on the board of the research park of IIT Bombay. And we have a center that our family set up there as well. So I, you know, and since it's not too far, it's about half an hour away, almost every week I'm there. So it's one of those, you know, one of those things that we'll cherish.
What does it take to make India the research capital for AI in the world? Because we have the talent base, we have the now support and the both from government as well as entrepreneurs like yourself. What does it take and what can we as, you know, participants in the ecosystem do more of?
See, some of our best talent goes abroad, right? And so that's, I mean, if you look at all the top companies, you know, when I go, when, you know, I told you about the fact that some of the global off-takers are talking to us, almost every organization I've spoken to, there's an Indian that I'm speaking to, right? And so a lot of our, we need to do a better job of keeping our talent within the country. I think that ecosystem needs to be developed. I think one of the biggest challenges we have is risk capital, right? So today, I don't think with when Sam Altman had an idea and if he had come to India to, I don't think he would have got like $1 billion funding or hundreds
maybe
of billion.
Charles, any questions I should have asked that I didn't ask?
So one of the questions, you know, when we were starting, a lot of people told us, why are you incorporating your company in India?
Huh.
Right? I would not do it anywhere else, right? I don't care about the tax, etc. This has to be an Indian company. Fair enough, you have now large foreign investors, that's fine, but the company has to be Indian. So
wow.
That is something that we were very careful. We did not agree to. We had a lot of things, you know, a lot of investors ask founders to flip their companies. I don't believe in any of that stuff. I think that it actually goes the other way for most cases. I know you guys don't, and
no,
you
no,
supported
no.
us. In fact, Avnish supported me in corporate in India, so I'm very glad. Yeah. And in general, what we like about our relationship with Z47 is that you believe in the founders. And, you know, that I think that means a lot, right? So as long as you have trust in the founder, you back the founder to the hilt. And that's what we really appreciate of Z47.
No, you're very kind. Yeah. Thank you, Sharad. Really appreciate you doing
Thank
this.
Thank you.
You're watching Z47 Moments, the podcast by India's oldest venture capital firm, Z47. If you like this episode, consider hitting the subscribe button and the bell icon so you never miss an update from Z47 Moments.